This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
All right, it's Thursday, 6 minutes after the hour. Welcome to the Steve Gruber Show, the hotline number, 888-900-9966. Glad to have you along for the ride as we head toward the 4th of July. So a couple of old friends got together a couple of days ago to talk about golfing and grandkids and just hang out and catch up a little bit. Well, that's the story anyhow, which normally would not be news at all if two old friends got together to talk about their grandkids and their golf game and things of that nature, because oftentimes, as you well know, those that talk about their grandkids and golfing and just catching up socially could talk for hours, and it would have no significance except the two old friends were Attorney General Loretta Lynch and former U.S. President Bill Clinton, whose wife, by the way, is running for president and who is being investigated for criminal activity by the Attorney General Loretta Lynch. That makes it a bit more noteworthy, don't you think? The two apparently met for a half an hour aboard Lynch's plane as it sat on the tarmac in Phoenix, the president, the former president, coming back from a round of golf. And she didn't even admit it until ABC 15, credit to them, to the local news team for figuring it out. She said, well, yeah, I did see him at the airport. I was leaving. He spoke to me and my husband on the plane, a conversation about grandchildren and social and our travels. Bull. And if you believe that, boy, I've got a bridge for sale for you. I mean, to be fair, Clinton and Lynch do have a history. It was President Clinton who, back in 1999, appointed Lynch to serve as the U.S. Attorney General for, the U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District. She left that for a private practice for a number of years in 2001, but was reappointed as a U.S. Attorney in 2010 by Barack Obama before he made her the top law enforcement officer in 2014. And I don't care. You have got to know. If you step out and do that, let me go to the National District Attorneys Association National Prosecution Standards book. I found this on the stream. The stream.org, a website that I think is terrific. You should go check it out for some of the stories on there. But in a story written by Al Parada, they have a bit of text here from the National District Attorneys Association National Prosecution Standards, and its section on conflict of interest, subsection 1, reads as follows. Conflict avoidance. A prosecutor should not hold an interest or engage in activities, financial or otherwise, that conflict, have a significant potential to create conflict, or are likely to create a reasonable appearance of conflict with the duties and responsibilities of the prosecutor's office. This is a textbook case. The attorney general meets with the husband of a woman who is under intense personal examination. She meets with the husband, the man that appointed her to the job originally. While she is currently investigating that man's spouse for criminal activity, that man's spouse is running for president of the United States, and they expect you and I to believe they were talking golf and grandkids. I'm sorry. Really? And the beauty of it all is they're in there talking about what they're really talking about, whatever that may have been. Nobody pays attention. Clinton voters will continue, well, she did nothing wrong. They were just talking about grandkids, and I believe her. I'm sure you do. The hotline, 888-900-9966. Matt hanging out. on the hotline. Matt, welcome to the program.
Yeah, it's a post-constitutional America and tipping into a third world America. That's what I believe we're doing right now. I wanted to say something about your Volkswagen deal. They went after Volkswagen more than they went after General Motors with the key ignition switch that killed people, because global warming is a sacred thing to them, so they have to prosecute this thing with the Volkswagen stuff.
No, well, there's no question. I mean, did you see Obama and Trudeau and the president of Mexico yesterday come out, and they've had this big American summit where they want to talk about integrating our, you know, our finances and integrate our trade. And but the two most important things right off the top, LGBTQ rights, because apparently that, you know, apparently that's primarily the most important thing out there. And number two, and very close, of course, global warming, because without that, you know, what the hell would they have to talk about? But these are the two most critical things facing you and I today, apparently.
Yeah, they don't talk about sovereignty. You notice that? They don't talk about
patriotism. They don't like sovereignty. I mean, John Kerry's out there talking about a borderless world. That's what they want.
Right.
They just want a borderless world, a microchip in your hand, and you just go from wherever to wherever to wherever. And I throw the microchip out there because, you know, you got to have some sort of identification. You can't just pass around freely. You know the deal. You have to be identifiable so they can keep you, keep track of you. How do they make money off you and keep in power if they can't keep track of you in some fashion?
Hmm. Yeah, factual. But I wanted to say one more thing about Trump. He needs to say, listen, I may not be the president you may want, but I'm a problem solver. I'm not a politician. I am a problem solver. And we have a lot of problems. And she has done nothing but make more problems.
Matt, thanks for checking in.
Yep.
It's Thursday here on the program, the 4th of July right around the corner. And you talk about, he said it's a post-constitutional America. There's a lot of truth to that. There is a lot of truth to that. If Hillary Clinton becomes president, the Constitution will be much less significant going forward. I mean, let's be frank. They don't teach much constitutional fact and law to kids these days anyway. It would only confuse the issue when they're trying to run roughshod over the whole deal. If Hillary Clinton becomes president, the Second Amendment, they won't just eliminate so-called assault weapons. A whole host of weapons will be under attack. The right to carry a concealed pistol will be eliminated, maybe not in Michigan immediately, in Ohio and some of the other states that have that, which is all the states, by the way. But it will be gone quickly in places like California and Illinois and New York, and from there they'll continue to creep into other states and wait for their opportunities. As the pendulum swings, they'll wait for their opportunities for more left-leaning state legislatures and so forth to take away the Second Amendment. Hate speech and other things will outline the decline of the First Amendment, the attack on those that, you know, publish dissenting views on climate change and so forth, being prosecuted, a good example of what's going on with the First Amendment, because after the Second Amendment goes, the First is soon to follow. I've told you that many times. It is the truth. Once the Second Amendment goes, the First is soon to follow, and then the Fifth, and then the Fourth, and then what do you have left? Judges telling you how to live and what's acceptable, not the Constitution. You must stand up. You must be heard. It's the Steve Gruber Show.
Genuine Michigan common sense on display every day.
All right, it's a Thursday here on the program, and straight to the hotline we go, the Common Sense Hotline. Bob standing by in Charlevoix. Bob, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Thank you, Steve, for taking my call. I'd like to make a comment about a comment that was made just a minute or two ago, okay?
Okay, go ahead.
Revelation 13:16 says, and he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bound, to receive a mark on their right hand or forehead, and that no man shall might buy or sell, save he had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of the name. Okay, how ironic. This is 2,000 years ago in the book of Revelation, Revelation 13, verses 16 and 17. How ironic.
Yeah,
so you can't buy or sell unless you have this mark.
Yeah, you can't function in society, and a lot of people have talked about that, and Bob, I got to run. But, you know, there's a lot of that technology out there these days. It's been around for many years, and people have these, I don't know if you call it conspiracy theories, this belief that maybe the government would require you to have some sort of identification that is permanently and indelibly on you, and you have to move forward with that, and it's been tested in the military and so forth. We'll go down that road some other day, but it's... We're in a time and place where the people, they want to know where you are, which is why you have social security numbers and other tracking, you know, information. You can't go anywhere without asking for your social security number. You know that. It's the way it works. Shifting gears now. Shifting gears to the state capitals, to Lansing and all the other state capitals and state legislatures around the country as to what the hot topics are. Because our next guest, Scott Greenberger, executive editor of Stateline, which is a project of the Pew Charitable Trust, we'll be releasing its 2016 Legislative Review Series, which looks at what is hot and what are the big topics in the state capitals around the country. Scott, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much for having me.
So give me an idea of some of the things that are important at the state level that maybe aren't being talked about as much at the federal level.
Well, some of these issues are being talked about at both the state and the federal level. Of course, for some time now, there hasn't been, there's been gridlock in Washington, a lot of these issues being talked about, but nothing's being done out, and in contrast to the state level, there is action being taken. And what we looked at for this year's legislative review were five different issues, criminal justice and policing reform issues, measures to curb the opioid abuse crisis, efforts in many states to phase in increases in the minimum wage, issues related to paid leave, paid family leave, and then also privacy issues. And that relates to everything from drones to data breaches. So these are all issues that states, many states in various ways debated and took action on this year.
I don't think there is any privacy left in this world, Scott. I mean, honestly, there's so much intrusion, both, and we volunteer for so much of it when we get on our computer, use our smartphone, and some of it we don't volunteer for as we're monitored. And in fact, part of what the last caller was talking about, we're being watched from a variety of people, from retailers to government and everything else. What can we do about privacy protection? What are some of the things floating around out there?
Well, it is a challenge because, as you noted, technology is always outpacing, whatever lawmakers and state capitals can come up with. But there is a lot of concern. You mentioned mobile phones, in particular. I mean, with each passing year, people are doing more and more with their mobile phones and putting more and more data, personal data, on those phones. You know, when they make purchases and whatnot,
And now we've learned. Now hold on. We've learned that that the government believes that those mobile phones, if you're suspected of a crime, even a very minor infraction, that phone ought to be turned over for them for inspection, so they can go through your emails and your text messages and figure out what's going on. And the crazy thing about mobile phones, it's a voluntary electronic leash. I mean, let's be honest. We know that anybody can turn on that phone. Heck, I can figure it out. If I have the system turned on, I can find members of my family on my phone. So therefore, I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say, well, if I can find my family voluntarily, then I'm pretty damn sure the government can find me anytime they want.
Well, yeah, you are. When you turn your phone on, that's right. You are revealing a lot of information about where you are and who you are. That's just the nature of the technology. I mean, there are other technologies as well that are raising privacy concerns. Drones, for example. Michigan passed a law this year prohibiting the use of drones for hunting or harassing hunters. And a bill that passed the House would criminalize trespassing on or above private property with a drone. And a similar bill in the Senate would require permission before flying a drone on private property. The other area where there are a lot of privacy concerns related to the collection of data is in schools, student data. A bill passed the Michigan Senate that would require the Department of Education and school districts to notify parents when students' data is provided to anyone else. A lot of schools are collecting data and sharing it with third parties, which are helping them to sort that data.
You know why?
And
money.
It, so.
Yeah, money.
Well, I mean,
there's a lot of money available.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a, that's true.
I mean lists, those, as anybody knows that's in business, those lists, those mailing lists, those email lists, a lot of money available there. That's big money for people.
Well, when you think about what schools are collecting, or what sort of information they have, it's everything from, you know, which kids are qualifying for free and reduced lunches, so they have economic and financial information.
They have medical information.
And also bus routes, so home addresses. And so there's a lot of potentially very sensitive information that schools are collecting.
No, and what you've just explained to me there, they can create a formula then. If all the kids that need extra lunch money are in this area and the kids that don't are over here, they can target what they need and target different programs to different areas, whether they're trying to sell something or collect votes or whatever they may be doing. It's an information world, Scott, and privacy, well, not much of it. I appreciate you stopping in. Where can somebody find the report real quick?
It's on stateline.org is our site, and we... every day, well, this week we're publishing one of these stories every day, and then every other day we try to connect the dots between state capitals and put what's happening in individual states in a broader context.
Stateline.org. Scott Greenberger, thank you very much.
Michigan, born and raised with Midwestern values and Michigan common sense.
All right, welcome back to it. 33 after on a Thursday. Glad to have you here. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966. If you want to save for your child's education, you can save with the 529 programs here in Michigan. In fact, those 529 programs are bringing you this part of the program, the MESP. 529 program, saving your kids' college future. Save with MI529.com. Save your kids, your grandkids, the kid down the street. Buy tuition today at today's prices and get to use it later. It's a great program. Save with MI529.com, bringing you this hour of the Steve Gruber program. Doug Sackleben here, the communications director for Club for Growth, to talk about some ideas about a fairer tax plan. But, Doug, I got to ask you something else first. First of all, welcome back, my friend.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me on again.
So where are we at Club for Growth with our disdain, I suppose, for Donald Trump?
I think what we've been saying, you know, is that, listen, we're never Hillary. I mean, she's obviously a terrible candidate and antithetical to everything that we would hold on economic issues. The concerns with Trump are that he's unpredictable, but obviously if he lives up to the I'll say to the website, because that's probably where the statements are the clearest and the most forthright, then we're in good shape. Our sense
I think
been,
the term,
you know,
maybe Trump's erratic. Maybe that's the term. Erratic sometimes. Is he just, you know, he just goes roaring out through there. Maybe that's the term. But, you know, people seem to like it to some extent, but he's still losing to Hillary right now. Is the Club for Growth going to get on board and fight for him?
You know, we're working on House and Senate races, and frankly, it's an issue of resources at this point. I mean, we've got enormous Senate races in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Florida. So our money and focus is entirely on those races and the House races that we've been winning to ensure that at least, you know, we protect Congress and try to put as many economic conservatives as we can there.
All right. Now, let me read you something funny. We're going to shift gears now. Here's something funny. We want a tax code that works for taxpayers, not tax collectors, said Speaker Paul Ryan of Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. This is, apparently he said this before we decided to go and bail out Puerto Rico in the most asinine move with American taxpayer dollars that I've seen in quite some time, and I've seen some real maneuvers lately. Then they bail out Puerto Rico, paving the way to bail out Illinois and New York and California and all the other states that have been completely reckless financially, and it got easy margins of victory. Bipartisan support, it sailed through. And I'm like, what a joke.
Yeah, we saw a number of the Freedom Caucus members who were against that and who fought it, and primarily on the basis that you've now put the taxpayers on the hook. So I couldn't agree with you more. I don't understand the logic behind this, other than that the argument keeps being made that somehow this gives Congress more authority in the situation. What it really does is gives Congress, a la the taxpayer, because we're funding it, more responsibility now to bail them out.
I think you just used the term logic and Congress in the same sentence. I'm not sure that works.
Maybe not. Yeah, you're probably right.
Let's go back to a perfect world. And let's say, for the sake of argument, we could get a better tax plan. And let's say that the Republicans could actually do something to the benefit of the American taxpayer. You guys seem to like the idea. Tell me what it's about and if it's really possible.
Yeah, I mean, the good and the bad of it. The good side is that the plan itself is actually a pretty reasonable one, in that it would take the corporate tax rate 35 down to 20. It would take care of a pass-through rate that's been a problem for a lot of small and mid-sized business owners who end up paying on their individual taxes and getting dinged, and it would bring down basically a Main Street business rate. It would lower the number of individual rates, bring the top one down. So it does a lot of good things. The downside, of course, on any of this is it's been 30 years since we've had significant tax reform. This plan got rolled out on a Friday afternoon, which I think speaks to the commitment of the conference. You don't usually try to make big news on a Friday afternoon. You just sort of throw stuff out there that you know won't get much coverage. So I think there's some concern as to the level of commitment to this, but it's desperately needed, and the plan itself is fairly reasonable if they actually follow through on it.
No, but what's it going to take to get there? That's the real question. How do you get there, you know, through this political landscape? The Democrats agree with nothing, it seems, that would save a nickel to the taxpayer, because they just seem to think they can get more and more and more, and it's all good.
Yeah, and here's the place where, and I'll say something nice in Trump's direction. I mean, here's the place where a president who uses the bully pulpit well and actually harnesses the American people to either complain or exhort can actually do something, because you're going to hear, no matter what, next year, neither side's going to get to 60 in the Senate. It's going to be pretty evenly divided again, and so it's going to be this things go there to die for the most part, and unless there's a president who can push the Senate's hand to force some of these bills and get some bipartisan agreement on some of this stuff, we probably won't get any. We'll just keep nibbling around the edges like we've been.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, because you look at the Senate. The funny thing that I've noticed, and maybe you can help me, with Doug Sacklaban here from the Club for Growth, when the Democrats are in charge, they find the most partisan people they can, i.e. Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, to be in charge of the different chambers. They find the most partisan, vocal, histrionic people, if you will, to get out there in front of the cameras and scream and pound and carry on and carry the message. The Republicans put out Mitch McConnell, which you sometimes have to drive a stake in the ground to actually see if the guy moved. And the same thing with Paul Ryan and other lackluster leaders that have, you know, we don't want to, hurt anybody's feelings. And it's like, really? It's bizarre to me the way these two different parties approach it, because, I mean, can the Republicans not find a firm on Madison Avenue that's available to them?
Well, and you watched it again just in the past, and obviously we don't deal with the gun debate, and I'm sure you've talked about it a lot, Steve, just the way after Orlando, the Republicans found themselves almost immediately back on the defensive and saying, oh, sure, you can have votes on all this stuff, and there was no forward, proactive sort of let's attack ISIS, let's deal with some of the national security issues, and that's just McConnell's modus operandi. It just seems like this so-called good governance, where you be the sort of amicable party that tries to get along, gets trounced every time, and our firebrand guys who are willing to fight it's almost like the party's embarrassed of them.
Well, you know, that there's the truth. There you hit it. And we just want to go along, get along, be polite. Well, polite doesn't work. You know, and the other side, the other team doesn't work on polite. The other team works on in your face. Here's what we're going to do. We make demands, and no matter how outrageous it is, they send out Harry Reid, Mitt Romney didn't pay his taxes ever, and just completely outrageous things that they're so out of, the realm of truth, and it just goes through. It irritates me to no end that the Republicans are incapable fighting fire with fire most days, it seems. I'll give you the last word.
Our side does a terrible job of pushing back. Monday afternoon when the Istanbul attack happened, the Democrats were on the House floor again with this whole gun issue when clearly ISIS is at the heart of it, and showing themselves to be tone deaf, and our side just kind of sits on its hands and hopes they'll embarrass themselves when, in fact, they just take over the media cycle again.
Yeah, there you go. All right, Doug, I appreciate it as always. We'll talk soon, I'm sure.
Pleasure, Steve. Thanks a lot.
There you have it, Doug Sacklaban, everybody, Communications Director, Club for Growth. You know, how is it that one team can figure out how to get it done and the other one's just, like, lost at sea? Thursday here on the program. We'll be right back.
Getting your day started with news from around the state and around the world. Common Sense Radio. This is the Steve Gruber Show.
I've got to run to keep growing, and I'm bound to keep on riding.
Thursday already? Holiday weekend ahead? That's what I'm talking about. You know, a big time for summer blockbusters. It's movie season for summer blockbusters. I think they're still trying to find Dory. What they're not having trouble finding is all the cash that went with her, I'm pretty sure of that. Ron Van Timmeren with me. Ron, welcome back to it from Celebration Cinemas.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, another record has been broken. Dory, the fastest animated movie ever to gross $300 million domestically, so it could be number one again this weekend, they say.
How many weekends would that be?
That would be three, and in the middle of a summer like this, going into a 4th of July weekend, that's... Well, it's not saying much for the competition, I guess. But you know what? There's a couple of these movies I really want to see.
All right, let's hear it.
The BFG. Actually, I already saw that. The Big Friendly Giant. You had me at Steven Spielberg. Raoul Dahl, the source material, a book of his, of course. His stuff has been made into movies before. Willy Wonka, the Fantastic Mr. Fox, James and the Giant Peach, and this is a PG-rated adult movie. I mean, kids will like it too. It's a little slow and scary for the younger kids, but I really thought the BFG was a good movie. What do you think of that?
You know, again, it's Steven Spielberg, right? I mean, where do you go wrong? Has he ever done a bad movie?
Well, he's done less successful ones. Let me put it this way. It's no E.T., which some people thought might happen with this movie. I mean, you're right. He makes really good movies, and they had a $140 million budget on this thing, and John Williams doing the music, and Mark Rylance, who won an Oscar for his role in Bridge of Spies, Spielberg's last movie. He's captured for the motion in the BFG, and it really looks fantastic.
Well, I mean, but you just underscored something for me. Bridge of Spies to BFG. It's not just that Steven Spielberg does good, great movies, frankly. It's the range from E.T. to Bridge of Spies to whatever, to Schindler's List, right? But whatever it is, from very, very serious to just fun.
Exactly.
It's all good.
Yeah, and he's, you know what, he's 70 years old. He's got projects lined up from here till his dying day, and he's just the best filmmaker we have in the business right now. He's got a track record like no other, and you're right, range, Oscar winners like Schindler's List or Lincoln to E.T. or Jaws. I mean, remember, you can remember the summer of 1972 when Jaws came out. Man, that was a cool movie.
Yeah, there you go. All right. So, anything else out there to attract people away from the hot summer weather into a nice air conditioned place with popcorn?
Exactly. I only need a couple hours, and I can show you The Legend of Tarzan, and an interesting cast with this. Alexander Skarsgård plays Tarzan. Margot Robbie playing Jane.
Mm.
Sam Jackson in this. Christoph Waltz is the villain. This one a $180 million budget, and you've heard this tale before, of course. You've seen Tarzan movies for years, but this one got a little different spin to it, and the reviews are lukewarm at best, but I always love the Tarzan story.
It looks, you know, it doesn't look bad in the trailers I've seen. I don't know. It looks okay to me, and it might actually be something I would maybe go see. So I'm not walking away from that one quite yet. Nope. Any other things we need to know, my friend, before you run off for the holiday weekend?
Yes, sir. The Purge, election year. If you're into a horror movie this weekend, we're going off to the future, 2025, Washington D.C. The Purge. Turns out there's a female running for president in this movie. What could happen? What could go wrong with that, Steve? Never mind. We're not going to talk about that. And then Swiss Army Man, better known as the Farting Corpse movie. It turns out if you're marooned on a desert island like Paul Dano and a farting corpse washes up on the beach, it could be very useful, Steve. Just kind of like a Swiss Army knife. Daniel Radcliffe playing the corpse. Very unusual storyline to the Swiss Army Man, but something completely different.
That sounds completely different. I think that's a fair way to put it, my friend.
So Finding Dory holds over. Of course, Independence Day, a little disappointing at the box office. Central Intelligence, The Shallows, Conjuring. Free State of Jones didn't find an audience this weekend, so hurry if you want to see that. Really good movie. Lots of choices this weekend, Steve.
All right, Ron Van Timmeren, everybody, from Celebration Cinemas. Ron, you have a great holiday.
I will. I hope you guys do, too. See you at the movies.
There you go, everybody. There you go. All right, well, 4th of July, which means not too long before the football players strap it on here for two-a-days and get ready for the kickoff of the fall season. Never too early to start thinking about college football, the greatest game ever invented. Speaking of that, iconic Michigan coach Bo Schembechler, still widely respected as one of the best leaders in college football, even after his death in 2006. With no disrespect to his illustrious career, this is from M Live, by the way. Legendary UM quarterback Rick Leach said he notices some distinct similarities between Schembechler and the current Wolverines coach Jim Harbaugh. That's what he says. He said, "I said, if there's ever a reincarnation of Bo Schembechler, to me, it's Jim Harbaugh." This is Rick Leach. You remember Leach, the cover of Sports Illustrated, 1976, Heisman contender, all of that stuff. I think he's even taking it to a different level. Could I see Bo Schembechler doing 38 camps in 30 days around the country to teach kids to promote Michigan football? That's quite an accomplishment. Leach, by the way, has known Harbaugh since before his teen years and played for Schembechler from 75 to 78. Harbaugh's father, Jack, you see, if you didn't know, coached the defensive backs when Leach played at Michigan, so he's real familiar with all of them. He knows them all. He knows the personalities. And aren't you ready for college football? I mean, I know it's the 4th of July, big celebrations ahead, but just take a moment and think, you know, what's your team going to do? Is it Michigan State? Is it Michigan? Is it, I can't even say the other two, but if it's one of those two, you're well on your way. Anyhow, it's Thursday here on the program. If you'd like to get involved, it's 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966. The brand new website available right after the holiday, we're hoping. We're right down to it. The brand new SteveGruber.com website. You're going to love it, guys. We took a lot of time with this. It's beautiful. It's interactive. And it's all for you. The Steve Gruber Show.